Let's see what the stew has for us today.
Welcome to the Gnomecast, the Gnome Stew's tabletop gaming advice podcast. Here we talk with the other gnomes about gaming things to avoid becoming part of the stew, so I guess we'd better be good. This episode is brought to you by our awesome Patreon backers like the captivating Carla Everson, Bob's mom, the jazzy Jeremy French, and the mono-named Craig. Today, we have Jared, Camden, and myself, Ange, and we're going to talk about rolling for initiative!
Yay! Hooray.
Before we dive into that main topic, though, let's ask our get-to-know-a-gnome question. Even if some games don't actually involve them, every gamer is super attached to their dice. Jared, what's an interesting story you can share about your dice?
So, a lot of people have dice bags. I actually have little organizers for all of my different dice, and I have different organizers for my Fate dice, I have different organizers for games that use just D10s, I have my Powered by the Apocalypse one that just has D6s in it, so I have all these different trays, and I just, like, grab, okay, if I'm going to play D&D today, I'll grab this one that's all my polyhedral dice. And the more I explain this, the more I'm worried about myself.
Cam, what about you?
Well, so my name is Camden Wright, and I am a recovering Kickstarter addict. There was a time when that involved dice, and now I have dice that I can't use anywhere, like these majestically beautiful giant metal dice that scar up anyone's wooden table that I try to roll them on. I have approximately 4 billion D12s that are actually double sixes, and I give them away as often as humanly possible, but it just winds up leading to more confusion at the table. And I have gotten better, and I am in recovery, so I appreciate that. What about you, Ange?
Well, first off, you mentioned the metal dice, and just last night, my roommate, who has a job at a local game shop, was telling me how she can always upsell people who are buying the metal dice. Because they have some nice metal dice sets that aren't too outrageously priced. But she'll always say, oh, and you're going to want to make sure you have a dice roller, because otherwise you're going to scar up somebody's table. And so she said yesterday she sold 3 sets of the expensive metal dice and a dice roller with each set.
Nice.
So I have a little bit of a story. My very first Gen Con I went to was 2006. And I was actually signed up for a fair amount of Shadowrun. So my first day at the con, I went into the Chessex booth and I bought a cube of really pretty purple and pink dice, the little D6s that are perfect for Shadowrun. And I went to my first Shadowrun game and they rolled really, really bad. And then I went to my next Shadowrun game and they also rolled really, really bad. Every single game I went to with those beautiful purple and pink dice, I failed at absolutely everything I tried.
Oh.
So the following year, which is after Gary Gygax had passed, they were doing this fundraiser thing where they had a giant D20 outside of the dealer's hall that they were asking people to donate dice to, and then they were going to auction it off and give all of that money to charity. And so I took that bag that I had put that cube of dice in, I took it up to that, and I'm like, you fail. And I just threw it in there, went into the hall, went to Chessex, bought a different cube of the little D6s that were green. And for some reason, those dice always behave perfectly.
Oh, that's awesome.
Let's move on to our main topic. Shockingly enough, determining who gets to go first in combat had to come up really early when RPGs were born. According to some grognards I consulted with, the earliest version of initiative in D&D was the GM and one player each rolling a D6 to determine which side got to go first. I don't remember that, but it's been a very, very long time since I played Advanced Dungeons & Dragons. I didn't even remember that second edition called for a D10 instead of a D20. But basically, there are as many methods for doing initiative as there are games out there. So let's talk about the different styles and methods for handling them. Roll for initiative!
Yeah, I still got a 4 on my D4.
Well, you, Cam, you almost beat me because I got a 6 on a D20.
Obviously, I don't have enough skills for initiative because on these Genesis dice, I still only got 1 success.
So, Cam, tell us about some of the games you run. What types of initiative systems do they use?
Well, I mean, I run a lot of different types of games. The story games have a tendency to run towards the sort of cooperative honor system. Everybody gives everyone else a chance. If there's a facilitator, they'll often step in and say, hey, I haven't heard from you. Is there something you want to do?
Yeah, that was actually one of the reasons I wanted to do this topic, because there's a lot of those story games out there, or more story-focused games, that don't give you a prescribed method for initiative because they want it to focus on the story. But I find that when I'm at the table running those games, I still find myself like going around the table to make sure everyone is getting to do something, even if it's not a prescribed version of it.
Mm-hmm.
Jared, what are some of the versions of initiative you end up having to handle as a GM?
Oh, let's see. Most recently, I've been running more traditional D&D, but one of my favorites was still when I was running a ton of Marvel Heroic, and you're basically doing the handoff initiative, which is the person that makes the most sense to go first goes first, and then you just hand off to everyone else one at a time until everyone is gone, then you start the cycle over again. And there's actually a couple other games. I ran Dresden Accelerated for a while, and it does something similar to that, where you just start off with whoever seems to be initiating the scene, and then they hand off until you resolve everything. And I haven't run it, but I think Star Trek Adventures does the same thing, with a few little widgets in between where you can interrupt and things like that. But it's kind of that similar thing. And then when I was reading through Pugmire, that also does the same thing, except to determine who goes first, you still roll traditional initiative, and that's who goes first, and then you start the handoff. So that's kind of a hybrid between the D&D and the handoff initiative. So
doesn't the Fantasy Flight Star Wars, the Genesis Star Wars version, do that as well?
No, actually, Genesis, you have your whatever skill is used for initiative, everyone rolls, and it creates slots. So if one person rolled a bunch of successes and they get that first slot, it's not that person's, it's that side's. So you created... You know, when you have two different sides to a conflict, if you rolled high, you could hand off that high slot to anybody on your side to take that slot. So you're just creating different slots that people can move into when you roll those.
Okay. I remembered there being something like that. Mm. So this is, I don't think there are any modern games that get too deep into this. But did either of you play Champions back in the day?
Yes.
Because that not only had you rolled for initiative, it also had segment order, and some characters could do multiple segments in a round. I think Shadowrun used to do that as well. And most of these were done to kind of show characters that were super fast, so they could do more in a round than other characters could.
I had a friend that was very, very big into Champions and Hero System, and he really wanted me to learn how to play it. And every time I started reading the book, I felt like it was literally a textbook and that I should have a professor up front giving notes to me so that I could figure it out better. So I never quite got into it.
It was what my college group played, and I remember having a very strong satisfaction at properly building a champion's character. But damn it, that was a lot of math.
I've been a part of a couple of Champions games recently at conventions, and you get somebody who's brand new that sits down. Luckily, all the facilitators that I was with, they knew their business, but when they watch another character go and then go again and then they go and then that other person goes again, that's really hard to explain.
It is. It is. I mean, if you were playing that speedster character, it was great.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, otherwise it was it left a lot of time for people twiddling their thumbs, which I think is worth discussing with when you're talking about initiative is how is a GM to best deal with keeping everyone at the table aware and attentive to what's going on, even though they're waiting for their turn? Do either of you have any tips or tricks for doing that when you're, you know, doing a more traditional initiative system?
Sure. I think that it's one of those cornerstones of facilitation in almost any part of the game where There are often people who like to talk and jump forward and have great ideas, and making sure that you are giving everyone that time in the spotlight, even if that means reining somebody back who's having a lot of fun.
Yeah. Jared, do you have any thoughts on that?
As far as like a traditional initiative system like playing D&D, there's times when if someone, say, is grappled and another person kills the thing that was grappling them, I'll throw it to the person that just got relieved of the grapple and say, how are you reacting to that? Not necessarily letting them give an action, but pulling their character back in to just see what kind of, you know, do you say something? Do you have a look on your face? Not like what the game would quantify as an action, but just to pull other people in so that they're always paying attention to what's actually going on as the game is progressing.
Yeah, I think that's kind of similar to what I do. I make sure that I always keep the description, the narrative of the combat going, and try very hard to not fall into, okay, it's, you know, your turn, what do you do? You know, because it's very easy to, you know, like settle to the bottom common denominator of just talking numbers. And that's when you start losing people at the table, you know, because, oh, I go on three and there's 10 people that go before me. So I'm just going to sit here and look at my phone or doodle in my notebook, or, and they've lost the page of the game because it got boring for them. So keeping the descriptions going, keeping, you know, staying on top of the narrative as I go from person to person in that initiative order, so that, you know, it's still exciting even if it's not their turn.
I do like that. Modern game design, even in some more traditional games, seems to be kind of addressing some of this, because even when somebody really wants to be engaged, if you got a table of like six or eight people, sometimes it's still really hard to keep track of everything that everybody's doing. And what I like is, for example, Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition has certain monsters have legendary actions. Mm-hmm. So they take actions in between the actions that the players are taking, which means it's a lot harder to just shut down until your next turn, because this thing could be able to take some kind of reaction and jump on you or drop somebody or do all sorts of things that you didn't necessarily notice if you completely tuned out. So, I mean, I like things like that where, you know, even in a traditional design space, people are kind of adding in this idea that things need to remain dynamic.
I like, too, some of the more traditional games and the way they handle, like, specifically what I think of. And I haven't dug into the newest version of Savage Worlds to see how it handles it. But I always liked, you know, their card-based initiative. One, it was always cool when you got the Joker, because that meant you could go whenever you wanted. Most people just used it to go first. But it still meant you could do whatever you wanted whenever you wanted. But I also like the, you know, even if I have a high initiative, I'm going to hold. And they basically just turn their card down. And then as soon as they decide they want to act, they can flip it up and insert themselves into the action. I've always liked when games codify that so that people can, you know, if they don't know what they want to do right now or they're still trying to gauge the situation, then they can go. I've always liked that. What's the weirdest initiative system you've ever had to deal with?
Yeah, I'm trying to think if, like, I've just been exposed to too many games and nothing seems weird anymore. This is scaring me.
Yeah, if you play it for any length of time, it's like, that's normal.
Yeah, I don't know if I've experienced anything I'd view as weird. The aforementioned champions can be cumbersome.
Yeah, that's a good word for it.
I think the first time I ever read through Dungeon World, where it's specifically not telling you every single person has this quantified limit of things that they're doing, it was hard to wrap my brain around. But since that time, I've run like a massive ton of Powered by the Apocalypse games, and I can do that now. But when I first read that, it was like, this is weird. It's not telling me to stop this person from doing something and give the table over to somebody else now.
Yeah, that was a struggle with me with Powered by the Apocalypse as well. You know, that first time I ran Monster of the Week and had absolutely no idea what I was doing, I was so grateful for the one friend at the table who did know Powered by the Apocalypse, so he could kind of subtly nudge me in the right directions. But the first time they got into a fight, I'm like, I don't, what's the initiative system? There's no, I just, oh, well, you said you were doing a thing, so I guess let's, Okay, what do you do? What do you do? Oh, and oh, the bad guy can respond now. And oh, okay, yeah, I think I got this. But it was definitely a struggle, especially when you come from a traditional system, you know, like D&D.
Mm-hmm.
To, you know, it's you roll your d20 and you add your dex. And God help you if you actually bought the feat for improved initiative, because that meant you were always going last. Always. When you guys are running traditional systems, what is your method for actually tracking and handling initiative? Jared, what about you?
Well, for my D&D game that I was running last year, when I was at GaryCon, I saw this thing that was so neat, and I ended up getting it, and I was using it for that whole campaign. And what it was is it's just like this stand that has all of these little flags on it, and it was dry erase, so you write people's names on it, and once you have the order, you put them on there, and then you just flip it over. And then once it's flipped over, that person doesn't go until the next turn, and you just flip them all over to the other side at the end. I'm not necessarily saying everybody should run out and buy gadgets because out of impulse, but I buy gadgets out of impulse, so that was what I did in that situation.
How about you, Camden?
Well, I run a lot of Savage Worlds, so cards are often on the table. It also gives me yet another thing that I can buy on Kickstarter. So it's appreciated. But I love that really clear throwing cards down. Everybody knows when they go. Flip it over when you're done.
How do you handle, one of the problems I've run into, like, I love the cards in Savage Worlds, but one of the problems I've run into is, like, if the table is cluttered and people mm-hmm. don't have a place to put the card so that it's easy to see, have you ever come up with a way to handle that when you've got that, you know, everyone's got their books and their drinks and their papers and their dice and stuff it all on the table and the card kind of gets lost in the chaos?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of table tents for that. Mm-hmm. And so whether small or big, it allows people to write their name on it, and you lean the card up against it. And so it kind of gives it a propped up semi-vertical surface to lean against. And that has taken care of a lot of those issues.
I did once buy one of those, I forget what the name of the brand of them, but they were GM helper type things. And it was this really cool magnetized white erase board with all these little things you could slot in. And I think I used it once before all the little pieces just disappeared and then the whole thing became useless. So I ended up settling on, I got a small, it's about 5x7 little dry erase board that fits nicely in my backpack. And I can use either wet erase or dry erase on it. And I use that. It ends up being messy, and I'd love to have something cool like what you described, Jared. But it's like, I figure I got my little board. And my dry erase marker, and that works.
No, I've played with the type of tools that Jared is talking about, and they are fantastic.
Actually, if you have a link to that one, we should put that one in the show notes, because that does sound cool.
It was really cool, and I just saw it sitting there at the corner booth at GaryCon. I was like, I got to get that. That's kind of neat. Now, if you'll indulge me, my uh-huh. favorite initiative tracking that I ever did was when we were playing Marvel Heroic, and I was running it face-to-face. In the book, they give, like, these examples of, like, handing Cap shield to whoever's doing their thing, and they have, like, a shield coin that you flip over. And those weren't things that anybody ever sold. They were just kind of the things that they were showing in the rules as kind of this example of tracking this. So I got a bunch of erasers with Avengers heads on them, and they were blank on one side, so whenever someone would take their turn, they'd flip it over to the blank side. And then to show who had the turn, I went out and got this foam Thor's hammer, and I would have them hand Thor's hammer over to whoever was going next. I am a total geek, and I love that.
That is cool.
That is awesome. I can imagine I can also imagine just the kind of the rush that would give somebody as it's their turn, and they get to describe their action, and they're holding Mjolnir, you know? Like, it may be squishy, and it may be foam, but they're holding Thor's hammer.
For GM-less games, fellow gnome Wen, he'll often use the gavel from Ghost Court and hand it out to people, and whoever has narrative control will hold it, and they'll actually, almost everyone, I don't even know if it's a rule, but they always hammer it on the table at the end to call it close to the scene.
It's hard not to when you're holding that in your hand.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I got to do that. Wen ran his narrative Deadlands game
mm-hmm.
at Origins and I got to play in it and I got to hold the gavel and, you know, you bang it down on the table and hand it to the next person because you just gotta.
There's this whole thing about having like some kind of tactile thing to show that somebody has a role in the group. It's not really an initiative thing, so it's slightly off topic, but in Worldwide Wrestling, if someone is not part of the actual match with their character, you can have someone narrate and they can add, you know, benefits to one of the people depending on how they narrate what's going on. And to signify this, they mentioned that they have the microphone. So I went out and bought a physical toy microphone so we could hand that to the announcer. And people love that. It's like having this tactile thing saying, I have this duty now, and this is what I'm doing right now. So I'm going to hold on to this thing, and it's great.
That is awesome. That is awesome. I think ultimately that there are as many ways to handle passing the action as there are games out there, pretty much. Any other last words you guys want to add before we determine who gets out of here first?
Take your turn and then let somebody else talk.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Share the action, share the floor.
Mm-hmm.
I also think, it's if there's not a situation where you have a structured initiative, I think it's also really good just to go from seat to seat as you're going, mm-hmm. just to make sure that everybody is checked in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you don't have a game with an initiative system at all, I think that's a good way to remind yourself, like, hey, what are you doing while this is going on as soon as somebody does something significant? But even in, like, D&D, if you're in a social encounter, remembering that, okay, this person is making the check and talking, talk to the person to their right and see what they're doing while this is going on and just cycle around the table before you get back to that person and then make another check is a good way to make sure you're keeping everybody doing something.
I think it starts to verge into a different topic, but it is very important for the GM to kind of play ringmaster and make sure that you're making the spotlight go all over the table. Because it's very easy when you're stressed about making sure the story unfolds, that the players get the information they need, that stuff is happening, that you're moving stuff forward. It can be very easy to not realize that you've got just one or two dominant players doing all of the things and the quieter players aren't stepping up for themselves. And you got to be able to remember to throw the spotlight back on those quieter players so they have a chance to get in there and do stuff. I think we can get out of here.
Yeah.
This show is funded by the Gnome Stew Patreon. You too can become a Patreon backer by following the Patreon link on the Gnome Stew website to the Gnome Stew Patreon. This ad is brought to you by the ultimate initiative tracking system that promises to make your life at the table easier, but is so complicated and has so many little bits that you'll spend more time than ever tracking initiative, but at least it'll look cool. If you're enjoying the Gnomecast, you'll probably like many of the other Misdirected Mark shows. Here's another one to check out.
Panda's Talking Games. Phil and Senda answer your questions about RPGs from the perspective of one-shots and campaigns. With some panda silliness. Some.
I know, some. Bloop. You can find all of us at GnomeStew.com, at GnomeStew on Twitter, and GnomeStew on Facebook. Camden, where else can we find you on the internet?
You can find me at Camden.com, C-A-M-D-O-N, or Twitter at Camden.
And Jared, where else can we find you?
You can look for my blog at What Do I Know on the internet. And you can find me on Twitter at KnightErrant_JR.
Awesome. And you can find me on Twitter at Orikes13, O-R-I-K-E-S-13. So, do you guys think we avoided the stew this week? Or should we roll for initiative to see who gets out of here first?
If I get initiative, I'm going to take a full retreat so I don't incur an attack of opportunity.
Let's do it. Oh, I got a 2.
Well, I guess all that matters is you're faster than somebody else.
I think I'm that someone else.
Gnomecast is hosted by Misdirected Mark Productions, the media arm of Encoded Designs.
Well, I've got my blog at, fail. God, that's terrible. I'm sorry, Rob.